welcome to Rabble Radio. It's Friday, November 10th, 2023. I'm your host, Brianne Doyle. Thanks so much for tuning in. Rabble's got its finger on the beat of the issues that matter to you. If you're curious about the latest news in Canadian politics, labor, environment, or social justice, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us, free of corporate influence. This week on Rabble Radio, Rabble editor Nick Seabrook speaks to Karen Rodman, executive director of Just Peace Advocates. Just Peace Advocates is engaged in advocacy around the protection of human rights of Palestinians and offers advice and support to those engaged in nonviolent pro-Palestinian activism. A little bit about our guest today. Karen Rodman is a human rights advocate and, as we said, serves as the executive director of Just Peace Advocates. She is also the founder of Palestine Just Trade. Rodman was ordained as a United Church of Canada minister in 2015 and has served as a human rights volunteer observer in Palestine through the World Council of Churches. She retired from senior management leadership with the Ontario Public Service after over a three-decade career. Here is Rabble editor Nick Seabrook with Karen Rodman in conversation. Take a listen.
Welcome. My name is Nick Seabrook. Today, I'm speaking with Karen Rodman of Just Peace Advocates. Just Peace Advocates is an organization that, through the rule of law, advocates for human rights in Palestine and solidarity with the Palestinian people. Karen, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me, Nick. It's always good to do things with Rabble.ca.
First, let's talk a little bit more about Just Peace Advocates and what they are. For our readers and listeners who might not know, could you explain it a little bit further for us?
Sure. So in 2018, a few of us came together and thought that having an organization that would work with other organizations already in Canada, but a bit more focused on providing some advocacy and legal support to other folks who might be facing challenges and some proactive legal work. So we're not, you know, Palestine Legal, but we did sort of reach out to Palestine Legal in the US and to other groups in Europe. And at that time, there really wasn't a group doing that work here in Canada. So that was really where we came together. Although our first launch was really across country, we actually did a tour with Jonathan Kitab, who was a founder of Al-Haq, one of the premier human rights group in Palestine. And our focus at that time actually was on Gaza with a campaign that we work with Al-Haq in Palestine and Ramallah on called Gaza 2020, with the focus, of course, at that time that the UN had said Gaza would be uninhabitable by 2020. So we made our way across, I think, six provinces and, I don't know, 30 or more different towns and cities at the time, sharing that information and talking about what people were looking for an organization. One of the early things that we did, and we actually did it with our mutual friends at Canadian Foreign Policy Institute, just as they were starting, I had already been working with now the late, unfortunately, Robert Astley with the Canadian Friends of Sabeel, who had said a couple of years before Canada's bid for the United Nations security seat had come up, that we need to put Canada on notice that they shouldn't be getting a seat if they don't change their voting. So I think that was maybe 2018. And of course, that actual vote for the seat, I believe, was in June of 2020. And so we had put them on notice. We'd organizations had signed on, letters had been sent. Of course, there was radio silence from the Trudeau government about that at the time and through that couple of year period. We sort of did it both Novembers during the time when the UN votes on many resolutions related to Palestine. And then Canadian Foreign Policy Institute started working on a campaign that was broader, looking at all the foreign policy shortfalls of Canada, I guess I could say. And so I was working with our friends over there, Eve and Bianca and other folks. And so then we put this real focus on to Palestine related to that. And that really, I think, worked well in that we did reach out multiple times, including individually with letters and other things to all the ambassadors around the world, right, that were in New York at the UN. And that pressure, we think, made a difference in Canada not getting that bid. So sort of from that, we kind of evolved in terms of some of the work we were doing became very much, you know, certainly advocacy and holding Canada accountable. And that certainly was part of our vision, but also working, you know, in a bit broader context than just Palestine as well, more in the decolonization, anti-imperial, and holding Canada accountable for foreign policy. So from that, we've tried to keep a kind of a balance of some advocacy, communications, media work, and other things, including Kashmir, which we probably aren't talking about much here, but is very important because it really has the parallel history of Palestine. So we are doing work with groups on Kashmir as well.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for that, to give us that background, that context of Just Peace Advocates. Now, just moving up to this past October, since the Hamas attack in Israel on October 7th, Israel has rained down destruction on Palestinian civilians living in Gaza. The death toll keeps on climbing. Tragically, it's a lot of women, children, innocent bystanders who are bearing the brunt of this right now. I just wanted to ask you about what is Just Peace Advocates been engaged in? What work have you been doing since October 7th?
Right. So, I mean, a lot of groups have come forward that have been really, really active. So the space has been filled up, and rightfully so, with groups that maybe haven't done a lot with Palestine and other things. So we have, you know, had a couple of campaigns where we have written, you know, letters. Again, we always do join with a number of groups, whether it be Canadian Foreign Policy Institute or Palestine House or Palestinian Jewish Unity in Montreal or, you know, the Canadian BDS Coalition. So different groups that have come together. So we did sort of have those campaigns calling out early and quite strong around our own government's accountability in that regard. We've been doing some quiet work, I mean, around the legal piece as well. There are a number of groups that have come out over the last little while, and especially this month, to provide services, which is really excellent, to help people get connected when they need a lawyer. Because there are a lot of people that are losing jobs, are being threatened in different ways, businesses, student organizations. I mean, you know, we've seen some of the media on that and read that. So we've been pretty quiet, but we do have about 100 lawyers. I maybe digress here a little, Nick, if I can, but we have about 100 lawyers or so that are on a list that we keep in touch with on legal things who've said they're interested in work on Palestine that's sort of been built up over the last couple of years. And about a dozen of those lawyers across Canada were ready to go to Palestine. We were almost on the plane in mid-March of 2020 as COVID happened, and we didn't get there. But that was to be a study tour at the time with Al-Haq, and then to come back and to build that network. So we had to do that in different ways, but it kind of has been important in the last month because it has allowed us to find lawyers, sometimes through another lawyer who can get the right expertise across the country, whether that be in Quebec or whether that be in Vancouver or whether that be in Ontario or wherever. And that's not to say that there aren't a lot of other groups doing that and have come to the plate. So we need all of us, and that, I think, is important. So that's one of the quiet things we've been doing. We can talk a little bit more about the webinar and work with Sarah Jama, because that's one thing that we also have done, which speaks to the silencing at all and many different levels. We put press releases out working with other groups to about 2,500 media that are on a media list. So we do that. And the last thing I'll mention is the wonderful work that World Beyond War and kind of through the broader Canada-wide Justice and Peace Network, which is about 45 of our groups across the country that are doing anti-war work, saying don't buy drones, whether they're manufactured in Israel or whether they're manufactured in the U.S. Don't buy drones for warfare here in Canada or that kind of thing. So working fairly quickly in early October, Rachel Small, who again is a mutual friend, I think, of Rabble and all of us, she and I and a couple of us worked to get basically companies that are involved in the manufacture of war machinery that is going to Israel, going that way. I mean, we worry about both ways, but going that way, and got a map, an interactive map together. And then some actions have been happening kind of across the country, and I expect there will be a few more that will bring that to the forefront. Of course, we tie in other things like Scotiabank and their complicity with Albert, and you know, there are other sort of auxiliary kinds of things related to the war industry that groups, you know, and the idea is these are grassroots groups that can then just kind of pick this up and start to do things based on their own area because they feel pretty motivated with the horror that we're seeing, of course, in Gaza, as you've said, but also across the West Bank and in El Quds in East Jerusalem as well, and really across all of historic Palestine. So the motivation's sort of there.
Right. And you mentioned Hamilton Center MPP Sarah Jama, who was very public over the past month about her support for Israel, calling for a ceasefire. In reaction, she was censured in the Ontario legislature and expelled from the Ontario NDP. I was just wondering if you could go a little bit more into what your reaction was to the treatment of this prominent person who was, because of her advocacy, she was persecuted.
Yeah, well, the censoring is like just so unusual. It's just so like over the top. I'm not sure if people, you know, listened to the Ontario legislature when the debate was happening, which really was to sort of say like silence people and stop people coming from onto the street. And I mean, that was like 9 hours apart of Ontario legislature time, and the rhetoric and the information that was just inaccurate and dispelled, it was just wrong that was being said. But of course, all of this was, of course, related also to Sarah Jama as well, and the pressure to then right after that for the legislature to censor her, and then for the Ontario NDP to remove her from the party. So of course, and it hasn't been just in this case, but in other very, you know, similar kinds of cases where Just Peace Advocates working with other groups have stepped up to do this kind of work in the past, right? So it sort of was fairly natural. So we started just with a letter writing campaign to the Ontario NDP. That's not the first one that they have seen from some of our groups, and certainly the federal NDP have seen quite a few over the years from our groups. But we started with that, and then the webinar came together. I give full credit to Canadian Foreign Policy Institute for really pulling that together, but all of us working in the background on that. And then the letter, some more letter writing that we've done more recently to Doug Ford, as well as the NDP. And of course, the article that Travel published, which I think we're about 430 or 50 people have signed it now that we've put on the Just Peace Advocates website as well, Nick.
Yes, that letter in support of Sarah Jama is available on rabble.ca, and I believe it went up last Thursday, so it's gathered quite a bit of support over the course of the week. But Sarah Jama is an example of what can happen if you're advocating for Palestine, for peace. And you mentioned earlier that there are those who in the workplace face consequences for this, you know, not just in a political role. I understand that on the Just Peace Advocates website, you have a legal and tactical guide for those who want to engage in pro-Palestinian activism. And I was wondering if you could tell me a little bit about what's in that guide.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for mentioning that. I mean, it is just pretty comprehensive looking at you know, the really practical things if you're doing a demonstration to how do I actually do an access request or a human rights kind of complaint? What do I really need to know about BDS and boycott, divestment, and sanctions, and what some of the history and some things that you could be more proactive and more detailed around? How do I hold a company accountable under business and human rights, Canadian and international law? It's all downloadable, so it can all be downloaded as a PDF, or the chapters can be downloaded individually. And then there's a number of information sheets that pull on some of these specific topics, some that I just highlighted, so you can have those information sheets. So we work with one lawyer in particular, but collaborated and reached out to other legal experts to put that together. I don't know, sometime after 2020, after we didn't get to Palestine, that was one of our to-dos, and we went ahead and got that together so that we'd have it, and did a couple of webinars and things at the time to provide some basis on knowing people, you know, knowing your rights and also knowing the risks, trying to understand the law in terms of, if somebody claims that you've defamed them, or if you feel you've been defamed, those kinds of things. And I'm not a lawyer at all, but this was just to make it as practical as we could, but really legal based and really detailed, and bringing in the precedents from across Canada. That resource is there, along with a form if people did want to get help. But there are, you know, some tools like that are available that people can use to reach out as well.
It is a big issue, and it can be daunting for an individual. You know, the conflict between Israel and Palestine goes back decades and centuries, and it's on, you know, the other side of the world. It's a very charged issue. So for someone who wants to get engaged with this issue and, advocate for justice for Palestine, where would you recommend they start?
There are so many resources, and I'm not sure there is really one particular one that I'm suggesting. Certainly to inform themselves and use the resources that are out there, including on the Just Peace Advocates website, the Canadian BDS Coalition, bdscoalition.ca, has lots of good information. And I mean, really, you know, makes it clear that, of course, this is about ending the occupation, and within that, of course, ending the blockade and siege on Gaza and the military law that, you know, has been in place since 1967, but in fact has been in place since 1948, because with the exception of only 2 years in the 60s, what we call or is known as Israel, or is called Israel, military law was there from 48 to 66, right? So this is, as people say, the 75 years to understand that, but to understand also apartheid. So certainly looking at the resources that have come out from Palestinian groups for many years, but more recently from some of the bigger international human rights groups like Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch, and Israeli human rights groups such as B'Tselem, and understand the concept of apartheid within the context of the details around different laws and different structures, including the National Bill Law and some of the laws related to Jerusalem specifically and those kinds of things. And then not to lose sight of the right of return that was promised by we, the international community. Canada was part of that blueprint in 1948 as the United Nations was coming together, and the right of return. And a lot of the work that happened after 67 in the context internationally, but here in Canada, was to shut down that narrative and say, well, you know, we just got to have a nicer occupation, maybe end the occupation, then maybe Oslo will come up with some peace agreements, and those kinds of narratives that have carried us through a very long 56 years, I guess it is. So for people to have kind of those concepts. And so there's a lot of information, certainly on our website and other groups, that will allow people to sort of delve into specific issues, but also to take action, be it to hold a government accountable or to look at what things maybe you could boycott, or how you could approach pieces with companies and other institutions that either don't know or choose to have a narrative that is, you know, not supportive of the Palestine and the international law and the human rights afforded to the Palestinian people under international law and under Canadian law as well.
And over the next coming weeks, what does Just Peace Advocates have planned for in terms of activities, things like that? Where will your efforts be directed over the next few weeks?
Yeah, well, certainly paying attention to what's happening and sharing that information and being responsive if there are things that make sense to work on, like what we just mentioned with Sarah Jama's campaign. But certainly the real focus on the accountability of the Canadian government and, you know, what steps can be done to do that in the most tangible ways. So maybe we'll be in touch more, Nick, on some of that as some of that unfolds. And the charities material I mentioned, I think it's like about $10 billion over the last 5 years or so that's gone to other countries, and about 10 or more than 10% has gone to Israel. It's been reported to going to Israel. We know it's actually a larger amount because sometimes it's reported in different ways. But, you know, I think Eve Engler has written about this way more articulately than I can probably speak. But, you know, the GDP is at least as high as Canada's. At some points, it's even been higher, reported higher. And here, even if it's not, you know, even if it was going for other things in the military or to support very right-wing settlements like Ketamine, where Smotrich is from and where the pogroms in Hawara happened, you know, earlier this year, even if that money isn't going to places like that, but it is, unfortunately, going to places like that and to and to supposedly charities like that from charities here, over 10% of our tax-paying charity dollars going to a country with the same GDP, give or take, as ours is certainly a moral issue, if not an ethical issue. And I mean, I think, you know, fairly shortly it will be seen that, you know, maybe some of the campaigns that have happened with some complaints that have been made to the Canada Revenue Agency, some of those go back with the Jewish National Fund that Independent Jewish Voices has been involved in for a number of years, but ones that have been more recent, like Mizrachi, who supports Regavan, which is basically the main settler organization that is really, you know, focused on taking land from Area C of Palestine, but right across historic Palestine. And we've done stuff on webinars and stuff on that. But an organization like that, to others that we're, you know, we're seeing those complaints. We're seeing also that less money based on access requests and such that we're getting back is actually being reported going to Israel. So that raises some questions that I think we need to do a bit more delving into and share as we go forward, because certainly those of us putting our, you know, subsidizing dollars to go to fight this war in that way is concerning, very concerning, right?
Absolutely. Well, thank you, Karen, for taking the time to speak with me today about the important work that Just Peace Advocates is doing on the issues surrounding Palestine right now. It's very much appreciated. Thank you so much again.
Thank you so much, Nick. It's my pleasure and our pleasure as an organization as well. Thank you.
That was Karen Rodman, Executive Director of Just Peace Advocates, and Rabble Editor Nick Seabrook in conversation. Thanks so much for that, Nick and Karen. Now it's time for a segment we like to call In Case You Missed It. And for that, let's turn it back over to Rabble Editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. In labor news, this week saw a historic moment for the labor movement in Canada, as federal anti-scab legislation was introduced on Thursday. The new legislation, known as Bill C-58, would prohibit the use of temporary or scab workers in all federally regulated workplaces, with a few exceptions. In the news conference announcing the bill, Labor Minister Seamus O'Regan acknowledged that an anti-scab law had been a priority for unions for a long time. Several prominent labor leaders were in attendance at Parliament for the introduction of this historic legislation, including Canadian Labor of Congress President Bea Brusk. Brusk said that this bill represented an important step in union-employer relations, as employers could no longer use scab labor as a tool to extend strikes, saying, quote, "If we ban the use of scabs once and for all, we can take a real step towards less labor disruptions, avoiding work stoppages, and building a more balanced economy while increasing the benefits and respect workers deserve." End quote. Staying with labor news, Rabble labor reporter Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga reports on the fight for affordable post-secondary school tuition. University students across Canada held a National Day of Action to fight rising post-secondary tuition fees on November 8th. Led by the Canadian Federation of Students, protesters were joined by many labor allies in their call for free and accessible education. Students who took to the streets also received support from organizations like the Canadian Association of University Teachers and the Ontario Secondary School Teachers Federation. Kaluki Kasuga explained that unemployment for young workers outpaces general unemployment rates and that high tuition costs can contribute to this problem. High tuition can create barriers to education, which in turn can create barriers to work. In national news, Rabble parliamentary reporter Carl Nirenberg analyzed the growing tension and fears among Canada's Muslim and Jewish communities over the ongoing conflict in Israel and Palestine. This week, a fight broke out at Montreal's Concordia University between pro-Palestinian and pro-Israeli supporters. Nirenberg shared the fears that many from both communities feel at this time, with some going as far to try and hide their identity to avoid conflict and harassment in public. In a statement last month, Prime Minister Justin Trudeau acknowledged that anti-Semitism and Islamophobia were on the rise. In Ontario politics, hundreds have signed a letter in support of Hamilton Centre MPP Sarah Jama. Jama was censured in the Ontario legislature and expelled from the Ontario NDP for calling for a ceasefire in Gaza. The letter has been signed by prominent individuals like Pink Floyd frontman Roger Waters and CUPE Ontario President Fred Hahn and more than 400 others. The letter reads, quote, Jama's treatment exemplifies a history of marginalizing racialized voices. It is critical that we do not allow her to be silenced for defending Palestinian lives, end quote. And finally, join us for Off the Hill next week. In Canada and across the globe, we have witnessed weeks of horrendous violence and loss of life during the current crisis in Gaza, the occupied West Bank, and Israel. Media plays a big role in what we see and think. Our upcoming Off the Hill panel will shine a critical light on the media coverage this conflict has received, its biases, truths, twists, and turns. Join us on November 15th, 2023 at 4:30 p.m. Pacific, 7:30 p.m. Eastern, as we reckon with media accountability during this crisis. Guests include Carl Nirenberg, Baizan Zubi, Chris Sabena, and L. Jones. Visit rabble.ca today to register. To read the full version of these stories and much, much more, please visit rabble.ca.
Rabble.ca shares news for the rest of us. We believe news for the rest of us is about creating a more informed and connected world. Help Rabble.ca make quality, progressive news and views accessible to all. Become a Rabble Rouser today and support us during our summer fundraiser with a one-time or monthly donation.
And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.
Hey, folks.